Hi guys, welcome to episode 3 of Young and in Love. I am Taylor, and I am co-hosting with my husband, Josh. And today, we are going to be talking about our past experiences, and dive in deep on how they have shaped our lives today.
We love that you're here, and we hope that you enjoy this episode. This section, we're going to talk about major events or experiences that have helped shape us throughout our life. My major things that when I look at who I am today and sort of how I've come to be who I am, there's two major things that I attribute that to. The first one is my dad's work ethic. My dad helped raise 7 kids along with my mom, and we were a middle-class family, your typical American middle-class family. So he just liked to do things himself. So he's a really handy man. And from when I was really little, we were always doing home improvement projects on our own. We never hired someone else to do it. So I always remember my dad working, obviously as a chemist, because that's what he does professionally. But then he would come home and continue that work at home and giving us everything that he could, and always providing a good home. And the second thing is my mom's heart. I'm sort of what I see is my mom's charity or open heart to just love everyone who was around her and to serve her community, not only through her work professionally as a school cook, but also when she would volunteer for the marching band, when she would serve in church, when she would see those that were in need around her, her friends and her family, she would always be willing to go to them and to help them. And I think those two things have really played an important part in my character, as well as an ecclesiastical mission that I served when I was 19 years old to the age of 21. I lived for 2 years in Brazil, Fortaleza, Brazil. So I had to learn Portuguese, and I went, and I didn't work for 2 years professionally. I didn't go to school. I didn't fly home to visit my family. I only talked to them via email on Mondays, and I would call them twice a year on Skype. So this entire time I was dedicating myself to a different culture, a different people, learning more about Christ and what role he plays in each and every one of our lives, as well as meeting just wonderful people and learning from their examples and having to adapt to a new environment and an entirely different culture and how people work. And that has made me a very open-minded individual from where I was as a teenager. I'm really accepting of those people around me, and some things that often play a pivotal role in American culture, such as social classes and race and religion, really don't affect me as much as they would the common population because of that experience that I had in Brazil, which that'll come up often. I spent 4 months in San Francisco, which will always have a piece of my heart, but it's also where I found out that Taylor was the love of my life. Because I was apart from her, and my thoughts would always return back to her no matter what I was going through. And oftentimes she was the one that I wanted to talk to the most at the end of the day. So that really shaped who I am today. And, baseball, which is like, I would describe as my first love and maybe everlasting love, because I'm no baseball fanatic where I know every stat, every World Series win, every batter, every pitcher in the league, but I love to play baseball. I love the culture of baseball. I love going to baseball games. I love reading about baseball and the spirit and the energy that comes from it, and that's really shaped who I am today and how I can work and push myself to the utmost limit when I'm passionate about something. And I think that's all come from playing baseball from such a young age and competing always.
You covered pretty in depth about your mission in Brazil. But there's a few other things that you sort of just touched on, but you didn't really go into much detail about. So you talked about your dad's work ethic and how you learned from his example, but how has the work ethic that he taught you benefited your life thus far?
I think the most influence that has had on my life has been the confidence that I have that no matter what's thrown my way, I can do it. And if I can't do it, I can learn how to do it. Because my dad started fixing cars because he bought a book. He would buy a complete breakdown and rebuild of the car so that when he found out what the problem was, he could just take the car apart till he got to that part, switch it out for a new one, and then put the car all back together simply because he had a book. Nowadays, we don't use a lot of books, but there are a lot of instructional YouTube videos and also experts in instructional video online and in articles that have been written, and you can Google anything. So when problems come my way, I never really fret about it because I know that I can figure out a way to overcome. And I think that's come from my dad's work ethic and his desire to always do things on his own and to not pay someone else to do things that he can very well do himself.
Right. Which I think is so cool, by the way, because coming from my family where, I call him out, where my dad really doesn't do anything himself, he's always paid for someone else to, like, change his oil or change a tire or, I mean, any small thing around the house that needs fixed, like, always hiring someone else to do it for him because... And she didn't know how to do it, and I don't think he, well, I don't know. I would just assume that I don't think he thought that he could learn it, how to do it himself. So after I met Josh and married, I was in awe, he could do all these really handyman-esque stuff, because I didn't think that's what normal people did that stuff. Like, I just felt like everybody always got help from a professional when... like something's like that really isn't a big deal, I guess, like got fixed, you know? So it's been really helpful in our life because I'm just like, oh, like Josh can fix anything. Everything's good.
Yeah.
So then you talk about your mom and your mom's heart and how like she's really kind and she was always volunteering and like serving others. So how has your mom's heart played a role in how you interact and treat others?
From my perception, my mom never put anyone in a judgment zone, I guess, or a classification. My mom never classified anyone. So like, oh, that person comes from a low-income family, or oh, that person has a bad background, or like, oh, that person's black, that person's Hispanic. Every time that I would see my mom interacting with new people or strangers, she always treated them the same, no matter how they dressed or how they looked. She was always ready to help and to go out of her way to make that person happy, and I think that's directly carried over into my life. I do my best at not judging others and will really go out of my way to spend that extra time talking to people. And I may not always have a spare dollar or a spare pair of shoes to lend someone, but I always have a spare moment. And I always go out of my way to make sure people understand that not only am I talking to them, but I'm seeing them. That they exist and that I'm recognizing their existence so that they can feel that they have a place in this world, if only for 2 to 3 minutes that we're talking.
Yeah. And I love that about you. Guys, one of the things that Josh does Any times it happens is when we're like walking and there's either a person in need or like a homeless person like on the side of the road or on the sidewalk, and they stop us and, you know, like ask if we have some spare change or like food or whatever to help them out. A lot of the times we don't carry our wallets on us or we don't have like any cash or change. But every single time, regardless of like what we're doing or where we're going, he stops and he's really honest with them. He doesn't just blow them off, and he asks them what their name is, and just takes a few times like out of our day to like figure out what their story is, and just tell them that he cares about them, which always like lightens up my heart. It's so cute every time he does it. I love it so much. So San Francisco, what probably was one of your, no, it was what, like your favorite year in school. A lot of exciting things for you, a lot of heartache and stress in our relationship that happened there at that time. So what were some of the thoughts and issues that you had to sort through in San Francisco before you determined that I was the one?
I don't know if I've ever told you this much about San Francisco, but you were so ready to get married before I left, and it's gonna sound pretty low, but Taylor had put on some weight before I had gone on this internship, and it was part of my more immature self that I always wanted someone who could like take care of their body and would and put their physical fitness first, and she had put on a couple of pounds, and I was really questioning whether or not I still wanted to keep going, because that's a petty thing to do, and sometimes we're petty. But she was so ready and like so into our relationship, and I was nowhere close to that, and we did not have near as good as communication that we do now back then. That was over a year ago now.
Almost 2 years.
Wow. Yeah. So it was rough, and I did not want to talk to her about it. I didn't want to know anything about it. So when I went out to San Francisco, I went out on a lot of dates, and I tried my best to not forget about her, but have a completely open mind for the future, to really look for something that may have been better, or that I would better suit me, and things like that. But every time I went out on a date or I had a bad day, it wasn't one of those other girls that I wanted to call. It wasn't one of those, or one of my roommates that I wanted to talk to. It was, you know, I most often came home and I grabbed my laptop and I went out on the balcony and we Skyped for hours. Taylor. I Skyped with Taylor for hours, and I want to make sure I answer the actual question. So,
what were some of the thoughts and issues you had to sort through?
Okay.
Before you decided I was the one.
So, yeah, I mean, that covers most of it. The biggest issue was, in my mind, marriage was something, and this was a life goal, was that marriage was the only choice in my life that I would ever have to make once. I can change careers, I can change which car I drive, I can change which apartment I live in, what clothes I wear, I can even change whether or not I run through a red light or not. Even if I run through a red light and I get in a car accident, I just pay the fine later and move on with my life. Marriage is not that way. It's a very serious commitment, and it's one that I wanted to make for my entire life. And then some. So I only wanted to ever make it once, and I wanted to make sure it was right. And at the time before San Francisco, I didn't know. I had no idea. I had no confirmation. You'll, for those of you that don't know us personally, we are very spiritual people. We go to church every Sunday. We pray every day. And we seek spiritual confirmation from our loving Heavenly Father to know that we are in line with His will. And I did not have that before San Francisco. And then one day, I feel like this is kind of dragging on, but one day that confirmation came. And maybe it's a story for another day for the importance of friends outside of our marriage, which is going to be a really good episode. So yeah, that was the issues I had to work through. And in the end, I did. And here we are on our 6-month anniversary.
So, would you say that baseball was your first passion in life?
Yeah. Yeah, I would.
And when did you first know that it was something you absolutely loved?
Actually, I don't think it would have been 11. It would have been before that, because I played Little League baseball, and the Little League World Series happens when you're 11 and 12, and I was on the All-Star team both my 11-year-old year and my 12-year-old year. So I would have been 10 right before that time, or 13, because I remember those years, like, pretty vividly, and I was super excited because it's the Little League World Series. Like, what kid doesn't love the Little League World Series? So it was the off season. And I remember just getting into it had to be 13. I think I was 13 because other things were sort of taking over my mind. And at that time, football, I had started playing football because my dad let me play football when I got to junior high. So I would 13 is like the 7th grade, right?
Right.
Yeah, okay. 2007, yeah. I would have been in 7th grade. Yeah, so I started playing football in the off season, and when baseball season started to roll around again, I was not feeling it because all of my friends played football. All of the football kids would like hang out after school, and I was starting to hang out with them. And my dad said that we should go out and start to warm up for the season with all my brothers because they all played baseball as well. And my sister was actually going to take pictures that year. She's a photographer, and at the time she was thinking about going into photography, and my dad said it would be really good practice for her to get action shots to like frame them up, and then she could take those shots during the season and then sell the photos to the parents. And I did not want to go whatsoever. I just, everything was against me at that point, and I just wasn't in the mood. And I'm pretty sure I threw a pretty big tantrum to just not go. But I ended up going anyways, and I'm like a little kid when I hit the diamond again. I just melt and everything comes back to me. And I just started whipping the ball around and throwing it and getting really into the game and swinging the bat again. And I ended up actually apologizing to my sister and my dad afterwards because they helped me realize that again, how much I loved baseball. And I knew at that point that the day I had to stop playing baseball was going to be a very, very sad day for me. And hopefully that day hasn't come yet. But if it has, there are tears waiting.
Yeah, he loves it so much. Probably one of my favorite dates I think we went on was when I was living in Akron for the summer and he was still in Cincinnati. So we would like every three weeks, we'd go take turns visiting back and forth. So the weekend he came down, it was like my sister's prom weekend, I think. And like we went to a drive-in, we went to this really cool, like,
oh, the batting cages.
Yeah, this is like mini golf, like arcade, like rollerblading.
Family fun zone.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. And it was really fun, and they had batting cages, and like I've never played baseball or softball like ever, And so he wanted to try out the batting cages, and I was, like, really nervous. I was like, I've never, like, really hit a ball before. Like, and this machine comes out really fast, and, like, what if I get, like, hit in the face? I don't know. But I did it. I did fine. And, like, while I was hitting the bat, like, he got so excited. Like, whenever I hit the ball, it was so cool. And it was just like, oh, and then whenever I hit it and, like, actually did it well, he was, oh, my gosh. It was so great. He was like, yeah, babe, yeah, that's awesome. I don't know. It was so cool. And then when he went, oh, it was so cool. He, like, got his little stance. And, like, he, like, swung as hard as he can, and it was really good. Oh, well, I thought anything he did was really good. But yeah, you can just see it whenever, like, he plays, how much he loves it and, like, cares about, like, how he performs. For me, probably one of the biggest things that have shaped who I am was my eating disorder. So when I was in high school, a lot of different things were going on in my life. I wasn't really getting along with my friends. I was competing in several, like, sports, and I was in just a different athletics. And I wanted to push myself to get better. So I would change my diet up to a more healthy foods. And I would, outside of practices, I would do extra workouts. And eventually it turned into an obsession. So I had body dysmorphia and anorexia and orthorexia. And I was addicted to eating clean foods. I couldn't pay attention to any of my classes because I was too focused on when I was going to eat, if I was going to eat, and how much I was going to eat. I would constantly be thinking about, like, how much extra mileage I would have to run that day to burn off what I ate. So some days I would come home from school after not eating all day, make myself a quick, small, like, microwavable veggie pack, and then I would go run 7 miles, like, outside, and then come inside, eat, like, a frozen yogurt, drink a gallon of water, and go to bed, and it was really, really bad, but eventually I, through a lot of help through my mom and a dietitian and a therapist, in treatment, I was able to recover, and that has shaped me now, because after going through what I think will be the most difficult thing I've ever had to endure in my life, it has taught me just how strong mentally and physically that I am, and it's given me my desire in health and fitness, and just practicing self-love, not only to myself, but to those just all around me, because I think disordered eating is such a taboo topic in society today, but yet almost everybody, men and women, struggle with it, at least, like, some part, maybe physically, maybe mentally, and it's such an important topic, but it makes me want to just get further knowledge on the topic of health and fitness and share my knowledge and what has worked with me with other people. The next thing that shaped me was bullying. So in high school, I didn't have it near as bad as a lot of people did, but I mean, I was, like, I don't want to say a victim, but I was bullied in the sense of, like, people were making up rumors that, like, weren't true, and, friends, like, choosing, like, other friends because of stupid reasons, or, I don't know, just leaving me alone in the dust. And I think it had such a big effect, because at the same time this was happening, I was also struggling mentally and physically with my eating disorder. But it just made me feel really ostracized and alone. And it caused me to attach even more onto my eating disorder, which just made me spiral down even more into a hole. But now, because of how alone and, like, dark I felt, I never want someone else to feel that way again. So I always try to make sure that I'm kind, that I'm friendly to anybody and everybody, that I always feel like a safe space for them to come and talk to with just open arms, because I don't want anyone to feel the way that I felt. And then at college, I was a wild party girl. I don't want to say I didn't have any morals or any values, but I probably had pretty close to none. I was just, all I really cared about was having fun and meeting new people and just experiencing everything. But I really wasn't happy. I was just sort of living for the moment. And it wasn't a satisfying life at all. And it wasn't until I came back to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints through the help of missionaries and through some of the people that I call, like, really good friends now, that have opened my eyes and see, like, the importance of life and why we're here. And it's just changed how I think about everything and anything. I know that life has a greater purpose than just living for today, and that our choices today have an effect on us, like, eternally. And so we need to make choices that are going to count 1,000 years from now.
We've talked a lot about your experience with your eating disorder, because it was something that quite honestly fascinated me when I started dating you, because I've never experienced hardship like that. And I met a lot of people who have experienced incredible hardship in their lives and help them find ways to become better through ways that they could find strength and find that encouragement. Whether it be through those who love them or through the gospel of Jesus Christ. But you were someone I knew personally and really felt that I wanted to get to know more and could possibly see myself living the rest of my life with. So I've talked a lot about it, but one question I do have is, when you finally entered recovery, because they consider recovery an ongoing process, right? And did you have to learn to love again?
Honestly, I think, yeah. I mean, when I was, like, in, like, the full, like, engulfment of my eating disorder, I sort of, like, describe it as, like, a demon that has, like, possessed my body and sort of, like, swallowed the real Taylor. It's, like, the only way I can really describe it to people that, like, haven't, like, I wasn't me, like, at all. Like, people today, like, see me as, like, a bubbly, happy, like, loving and compassionate person, but that wasn't me at all. I was cold-hearted. I was mean. I only cared about, like, what I needed to do. Didn't give anyone the time of day for anything. Really didn't pay attention to anyone. I would, like, do things for satisfaction in the moment to, like, try and feel love, because I didn't love myself. And I think I was incapable of loving others, because I don't believe you can love anyone if you don't love yourself first. Like, some people may disagree with me, but, for a fact, I didn't really care about my friends, didn't really care about my family. It was, like, all my focus on, like, calories and food and energy I, was using. That's the only things I ever focused on. So was I incapable of love? Wait, was that the question?
Yeah, basically, did you have to learn to love again?
Yeah, so after I was trying, like, when I was trying to get better, it was really hard for me. It was really hard for me to realize that, like, something was even wrong with me. I remember the first time, my mom, while I was suffering, she's a nurse, and she was in nursing school, so she would practice, like, IVs and, like, heart testing our heart rate and stuff on our kids as guinea pigs. And so one day she went to feel my heart, and I barely had a pulse. So then she really hadn't been paying attention to me because she was so busy with school, and my dad was always out of town for work. So nobody really noticed what was going on with me. And I was always involved with extracurriculars, so I just sort of went slid on by. But that day she realized that I wasn't okay. And she knew I had a problem. So she took me to the doctor, and the doctor was asking me all these questions what do you eat in a day? How many cups of water do you think you drink? Or how many miles do you think do you walk a day? Or how often do you exercise? And all my answers that were so completely abnormal that I thought were normal really sort of surprised her. And I was acting like everything was fine. And then she came back into the room, and she told me that I had an eating disorder and that I needed to get treatment for it. And she was going to recommend us all these different doctors and all these different places to go. And I was in such complete denial. But all these doctors, they cared so much, and my family and my friends, they all cared so much, and they just didn't understand why I wouldn't cooperate or why I couldn't see that I had an issue. And I didn't understand why everyone was just all up in my space, why everyone was just so much giving me all of this attention all of a sudden. And I didn't like it. I hated it. I hated it so much. And I think, and at this point, with the recovery, everything was just so hard that even accepting love was so hard. And I don't think I can describe when I realized that I was starting to have normal emotions again. I think it just happened slowly, and you didn't realize that it was happening. But I definitely did have to relearn who I was and who I wanted to be after I was in a stable place and was healthy enough to be on my own, away from doctors every day, or you know. Yeah. I don't know if I answered the question. It's a really complicated topic.
I think you did. The reason why I asked this question is because one of the most influential things that I learned from your eating disorder and your experience with it is that all of our choices have consequences. I do consider myself entitled because I had a good childhood. I didn't have to deal with divorce or financial hardship or anything like that. My family always had food on the table, and I was always able to participate in activities at school. So yes, I do come from a place of entitlement, and I'm doing my best to help those around me. You, however, had these choices that you made that had consequences, yet people still decided to love you, and it brings a whole different light to the meaning love and to truly care for someone. And the fact that you had to learn to care for yourself again and to know what others felt about you is an incredible experience to know that people care about you and that they were willing to do a lot of things for your health. How has that shaped your view of love today?
I think it's opened my eyes to almost what I would think is the definition of unconditional love. So much to where not everybody all the time is going to be at the point of life or death, in the situation I was. But also there's some people that until I started treatment, they had no idea that something was wrong with me. I mean, maybe if they talked to me, they just assumed I was in a bad mood all the time. But I mean, some people are just completely oblivious because all my clothes didn't fit. They're all big, baggy. You couldn't really see, unless I was wearing leggings and a tight shirt, that I was a twig. So a lot of people probably had no idea that something was wrong with me until I suddenly stopped showing up to things, you know. And that's just us. We walk around every day with some people that we love, and unless we really, like, sit down and, like, figure out, like, what's going on in their life, like, we can't see what's going on behind closed doors. So, I mean, you just need to love everyone, like, regardless of their situation. Like, love someone, like, someone who's about to die. Like, I think, you know, the quote that's, like, people don't know what they're missing, like, until they're gone, or, you know?
Yeah. You don't know what you got until it's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's so true. Like, so why are we like that when someone's gone and not like that when they're here, you know? So love someone like that all the time. I try to, like, embrace someone with, like, my full, like, being the majority of the time. I still have bad days. But I try my best to, like, make it, I'm going to get emotional. Okay. To make it known, like, how much I love people, because it's so important.
That actually leads perfectly into my last point, which isn't really a question. Maybe it is a question to see if you agree with me. But a summarization. She hit her bowling point right on the money and explained herself really well. As well as the college point and how you didn't really care for anything, any morals or anything like that. You just were living in the moment. But then when you decided to come back to church, you really turned yourself around and found that compassion again. And there's a great metaphor, allegory, I don't know what to call it, a story with a meaning behind it, that I heard about a little boy and his dad who would walk along the beach, and all the starfish would wash up on the beach during low tide or high tide, and then during low tide the kid and his dad would walk down the beach, and every once in a while the kid would grab a starfish and throw it as far as he could into the ocean, and he did this for a while, and then one time after the kid threw another starfish, his dad asked, like, well, Jimmy, I don't know what his name was, why do you throw, like, these starfish back into the ocean? And he said, well, because that's where he belongs, and that's what he needs the most. And then his dad said, but look at all these starfish. How will you ever make a difference? You'll never be able to throw all these starfish back into the ocean. And then the kid turned to him and said, but it made a difference for that one. And I think that's a really good summary of who you are, is that you understand your limitations and you understand your weaknesses very well because of that traumatic emotional experience that you had to go through. But now you know just how important it is to be present for that one person or love that individual for who they are, no matter what they're going through. So that's an accurate description.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'm just one girl. I mean, I work with children. I don't really interact with a lot of adults on the day-to-day. But even with kids, I mean, kids get really sad. I mean, like, things to us, like adults, like, that are no big deal. If that happens to a kid, it's like the world is ending. Like, they drop, like, their chocolate on the ground. They just had a meltdown. Like, they're crying. They're on the floor, like, hysterical. Or, like, their best friend, which is, like, a group of five people. Like, someone in that group, like, says they're no longer best friends. The world is ending, you know? So, I mean, just, like, taking the time. This goes with adults, too. But taking the time, if someone's, like, really upset, to just go up to them and just show them that you care. And, like, really, like, I think I'm a relatable person on most things, just because I've experienced a lot in my 21 years, just with all my, like, trials, and I try to be really relatable, but yeah, just trying to understand the situation and, like, showing compassion to just, like, one person, it can change their, not just their entire day, but it can change their life.
That brings us to the end of this episode. Last week we said that this week was going to be part two of getting to know us and who we are and how we see love. And we were going to do that through our past relationships. But we want to keep these episodes to a reasonable length where they don't take up too much of your time, and you can listen to them while you eat breakfast or eat lunch, and or while you're sitting at your desk at work, and not take up too much of your time. So we're gonna stop it there and just focus on our past experiences for this week and how they shaped us.
Next week, we're going to be talking about our past relationships and how certain relationships taught us different lessons, and just what we learned from those relationships, and how we have applied those lessons that we've learned into, like, our relationship when we were dating, and how they still apply to how we love each other. And
we also have some good news for this week. After much deliberation and a little bit of personalized cover art, we have had our podcast approved on the following platforms. So listen up if you use any of these platforms to hear podcasts. So we've been approved, and our pages are live on Google Podcasts, Spotify, which just seems cool because I've listened to Spotify for years now, and it's always been artists, but now I'm on Spotify with my wife, which is cool. Breaker, Pocket Casts, Radio Public, and Stitcher. So again, that's Google Podcasts, Spotify, Breaker, Pocket Casts, Radio Public, or Stitcher. Unfortunately, we're still not on the iTunes podcast app.
Hopefully
this week, right?
Yeah, hopefully this week it'll get on there.
No idea why, but we'll get there. If not, I'll just kidding. We'll get there. Most likely by the end of this week. So make sure you guys go and like the episodes there, subscribe, leave some comments, leave some feedback so that we can hear that you guys are loving it or hating it. And then we can respond to those on the podcast next week. So thanks again for listening. We love that you guys are enjoying this as much as we are. My sister had a little response from my mom, which I'll put in right here.
Nice save, Mom. Nice save.
Which is hilarious. And
that can be you if you leave a comment. You can be featured on our podcast next week. So
exactly. The best way to listen is through the Anchor app, because we get that personal interaction with you guys. If you listen to your normal podcast, it is very convenient. But if you go the extra mile and download the Anchor app, you can leave us personalized voicemails, which then we can feature on our podcast, just like we did with my sister. So thank you, Stephanie, for that shout out. And Mom, good luck at the family reunion. We love you all, and we look forward to hearing from you next week. Bye.
Bye.